I'm Laurel Bowman.
The head of Israel's military intelligence directorate has resigned over Hamas's October 7th attack, VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
Major General Aharon Haliva, the head of Israel's military intelligence, becomes the first senior Israeli figure to step down over the failure surrounding Hamas's attack. It could set the stage for more resignations. Haliva said in October that he shouldered the blame for not preventing the attack, which broke through Israel's vaunted defenses. The Israeli military said in a statement Monday that the military chief of staff accepted Haliva's request to resign and thanked him for his service. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports that the U.S. Supreme Court today is taking up a challenge by a city that wants to ban homeless people from sleeping outdoors.
More than half a million people in America are homeless, and this case stemming from a blocked outdoor sleeping ban imposed in Grants Pass, Oregon, will have nationwide implications. The city was ordered by an appeals court to lift its ban, calling it cruel and unusual punishment to prohibit tent cities and sleeping on sidewalks if there isn't enough shelter space. But an attorney representing Grants Pass says growing homeless encampments are unhealthy and unsafe. Municipal leaders say court rulings prevent them from common sense solutions. But housing advocates worry cities would find it easier to arrest people instead of finding them places to live. A Supreme Court decision in the case is not expected until June. I'm Jackie Quinn.
North Korea has fired several short-range ballistic missiles. That's what South Korea's military is saying. This is VOA News. Russia said Monday that U.S., British, and French military support for Ukraine has pushed the world to the brink of a direct clash between the world's biggest nuclear powers that could end in catastrophe. Russian President Vladimir Putin's 2022 invasion of Ukraine has touched off the worst breakdown in relations between Russia and the West since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. That's according to Russian and U.S. diplomats. TikTok is reiterating free speech concerns about a bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives that would ban the popular social media app in the U.S. if its Chinese owner ByteDance did not sell its stake within a year. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen reports.
The House approved the legislation, part of a broader foreign aid package. The Senate is expected to vote on it this week, and President Joe Biden has said he would sign it into law. In a statement, TikTok said it is unfortunate that the House of Representatives is using the cover of important foreign and humanitarian assistance to once again jam through a bill that would trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans. Many U.S. lawmakers from both the Republican and Democratic parties and the Biden administration say TikTok poses national security risks because China could compel the company to share the data of its 170 million U.S. users. TikTok insists it has never shared U.S. data and never would.
That was Reuters' Alex Cohen reporting. Monday is Earth Day, and the global theme is planet versus plastic. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
For Judith Inc., every day is Earth Day. As president of Beyond Plastics, which works to end plastic pollution, she lives by the theme planet versus plastic and says most of it is buried, burned, or dumped.
Only 5 to 6% of plastics are recyclable in the United States. So your key tip is to try to avoid plastic wherever you can.
Instead of a plastic bag of baby carrots, she buys a fresh bunch and even buys her peanut butter in recyclable glass jars. Enk says while it's hard to avoid plastic, be conscious and cut back with substitutes. Julie Walker, New York.
Students at Columbia University in the U.S. state of New York will attend classes virtually Monday as school officials hope to de-escalate tensions on the New York City campus after pro-Palestinian demonstrations led to mass arrests last week. The university's president denounced Monday anti-Semitic language and harassment that she said had occurred on campus recently. I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
This is
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And it is very important for those who are organizing elections to ensure that elections are free, elections are fair, and that elections reflect the minds of the voters.
And that was Catholic Archbishop Andrew Nkia of Bamenda, Cameroon, speaking about efforts to organize next year's election. Details coming up. Also in South Africa, former President Jacob Zuma and his MK party score a victory in court. And we catch up on the news and sports. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Former South African President Jacob Zuma and his newly formed Umkhonto we Sizwe party have survived an attempt to stop the use of the party's name and its logo. The African National Congress asked a court to ban Zuma from using the name, arguing that it belongs to its former Liberation Army. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Umkhonto we Sizwe supporters are celebrating after another victory against the ruling African National Congress. The High Court today dismissed the ANC's request for an order to stop MK from using its name and logo. Jabulani Khumalo, who is the founder of the MK, told journalists that the court victory signals they will win in national elections next month.
This does not only mean anything to us, it means more for our members and us as well. The election campaign and the win on two-third majority.
However, ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula told journalists the party is challenging Monday's judgment.
The ANC will be appealing the matter to stop and prohibit the unlawful use of the ANC's trademark symbols and heritage by Mr. Zuma's party, currently referring to itself as the Umkhonto we Sizwe Party.
Former President Jacob Zuma is backing MK, and this is the third victory he and the party have scored against the ANC, which Zuma once led. In March, the Electoral Court dismissed the ANC's application to have the MK deregistered on the grounds that the party was not properly registered for the elections. Earlier this month, the Independent Electoral Commission also barred Zuma from running in the elections, arguing that he has a criminal record. However, the Electoral Court cleared Zuma to compete. Komisi Kanare, a legal expert, says it is difficult to predict if ANC would be successful on this appeal.
There's always an avenue to, you know, take the matter forward. As long as we haven't gotten to, you know, the last court in the land, there's still a Supreme Court of Appeal where they can go. There's still the Constitutional Court where they can go. But it all boils down to the evidence and facts around the case. Even if you take there, what are your prospects?
The latest polls predict that the ANC will get less than 40% of the national vote. The ANC has led the country since democracy began in 1994. The polls also show that the MK is likely to become the third biggest party in the country after the elections. This scenario is likely to pose coalition challenges for the ANC as it seeks to get 50.1% needed to remain in government. I am Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Cameroon's opposition and civil society have launched a mass campaign to combat voter apathy. The goal is to encourage disgruntled youths to register to vote before the August deadline and go to the polls in presidential elections next year instead of just complaining that longtime President Paul Biya will rig elections to die in power. There are about 15 million potential voters in Cameroon, but only 7 million are registered voters. Moki Edwin Kitseka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Un citoyen, carte d'électeur. Si on a 20 ans, on doit avoir sa carte d'électeur. Sortez, sortez, sortez.
About 20 opposition and civil society members shout using loudspeakers on the streets of Cameroon's economic capital, Douala, that all civilians of voting age should register to qualify as voters before the August 31 deadline. Cameroon's presidential elections will take place in October 2025 on a date to be decided by 91-year-old President Paul Biya, who has ruled the Central African state for more than four decades. Among the campaigners is Mba Raoul, spokesperson of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement, or CRM Party. The spokesperson says Cameroon's opposition and civil society want civilians, especially reluctant youth, to register now and to vote and defend their votes when elections are called.
If we are really feeling this pain that this government has inflicted to Cameroonians for the past 40 years, we have to come out in 2025, vote massively and protect our votes. We should be the ones to choose our leaders. We have to combat electoral fraud by voting massively and protect our votes.
Opposition and civil society estimate that at least half of Cameroon's 30 million people are 20 years and older and qualified to register and vote in elections as stated in the country's electoral code. ELECAM, the country's elections management body, reports that about 7.3 million civilians have registered for future elections. Opposition and civil society say high voter apathy is due to the belief that votes do not count because Biya rigs all elections to stay in power. Biya has won all elections since he took power in 1982. The opposition accuses him of what it calls massive electoral fraud. Catholic Archbishop Andrew Nkea of Bamenda, capital of Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region, says civilians should not be discouraged because it is a divine responsibility for all citizens to register and vote.
Many Cameroonians are skeptical, but we cannot always presume that our vote will not make sense. If people go out massively to vote, their voice will make a difference. And it is very important for those who are organizing elections to ensure that elections are free, elections are fair, and that elections reflect the minds of the voters.
Nkea said all political parties and civil society groups should educate civilians, especially youths who refuse to take part in the elections, to know that it is their democratic right to determine who their leaders should be. On Monday, ELECAM said there was an increase in the number of potential voters in their branches in all towns and villages of Cameroon. They also dismissed claims that they rig elections to favor Biya. Elvis Mbogo is ELECAM's manager for Cameroon's English-speaking Northwest region. He told State TV on Monday that opposition parties and civil society groups are gradually noticing that the elections body plays a neutral role in polls.
The situation on the ground is changing. I see more politicians running to the field, galvanizing people to come out and register. I'm already establishing a good relationship with the civil society, not only the civil society, all political stakeholders. That's why we set up our objective to work with all stakeholders, and especially the media.
At 91, Biya is the world's oldest president and second longest serving leader after his neighbor Teodoro Obiang-Nguema of Equatorial Guinea. Biya has been in power for 41 years. Before becoming president, he served for 7 years as prime minister. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The International Monetary Fund and Ethiopia are continuing discussions over a loan and a reforms package despite wide differences between the two. Reuters News reports Ethiopia may need to devalue its currency, which is trading on the black market about 50% below the official rate against the U.S. dollar, to secure the IMF's support. The fund has not confirmed this is a condition of funding, but usually favors flexible, market-determined exchange rates. East Africa's most populous country, Ethiopia, already is struggling with high inflation and chronic foreign currency shortages. In December, Ethiopia became the third African state in as many years to default on its debt. The International Monetary Fund has made an urgent appeal to countries to build fiscal resilience so they can withstand an unforeseen crisis such as a pandemic, war, or skyrocketing inflation. VOA's Ignatius Anor reports.
the
Kristalina Georgieva, head of the International Monetary Fund, says global challenges such as climate disasters and the rising cost of living are a stark reminder of the need to prepare against such shocks.
When still part of the population needs support and half of the world is going to the polls, the time has come to adopt medium-term frameworks for fiscal consolidation. We recognize one size does not fit all. The pace and speed of consolidation would vary depending on country circumstances. So will also the balance between mobilizing revenue and improving spending efficiency. What is very important is not to forget the burden should not fall on the most vulnerable people.
Georgieva spoke at last week's IMF Spring Meeting. At a session on providing access to electricity to nearly 600 million Africans, Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, told VOA that a solar project to power the continent is already underway.
We are mobilizing already $20 billion to implement a very bold program, which is called Desert to Power. Desert to Power will develop 10,000 megawatts of electricity, connect 250 million people to electricity via the solar all across the Sahelian countries. And that's going to be the biggest solar zone in the world when we're done with it. We already started.
World Bank Group President Ajay Banjo spoke to VOA about a partnership with the AFDB to get 300 million Africans connected to the electricity grid by 2030.
There's the financing, which we're making commitments of more than $30 billion from IDA plus the private sector. The second part is working with governments, and today with the African governors, I talked about the role governments have to play, both in terms of making utilities possible to work with, making transmission, regulatory policies, all that.
At the annual meetings here in Washington, the IMF said it has the financial backing from members for its poverty reduction growth, resilience and sustainability trust. It has reached a target of nearly $30 billion in 2023 to enable it continue to be at the center of the global financial safety net in such uncertain times. Ignatius Anno, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. The top United Nations political official says the year-old war in Sudan has sparked a crisis of epic proportions and is fueled by weapons from foreign supporters. Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo told the UN Security Council on Friday that the war between the National Army and the rival Rapid Support Forces has left over 14,000 dead and created hunger, with 25 million people needing life-saving aid. Mohamed Ibn Chambas, chair of the African Union panel on Sudan, called external interference a major factor complicating efforts to end the war. Neither DiCarlo nor Chambas named any of the foreign supporters. However, Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has long been an ally of neighboring Egypt, and his government also held talks in February in Iran. The Rapid Support Forces leader, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, has reportedly received support from Russia's Wagner mercenary group. UN experts said in a recent report that the RSF also received support from Arab allied communities. African entrepreneurs have been in Washington pitching for finance and building interest in the continent's financial technology industry. VOA's Mike Hovey has more.
Daniel Barker is the chief executive officer and president of the tech incubator nonprofit Halcyon House, which recently hosted the Africa FinTech Summit in Washington. Barker says such gatherings are crucial to helping African entrepreneurs tap into international markets and enhance the continent's economy.
You know, over 60% of capital is going into early stage FinTech in Africa. It was coming from the U.S. in 2021. That's according to Africa FinTech's Summit study. So clearly there's an interest, there are resources here in getting African founders access to that those resources are really important.
Halcyon House's mandate is to support high-impact startups across the world, Africa included. Barker says the summit also helps American investors learn more about Africa beyond what they hear in the news, giving them a clear picture of the entrepreneurial drive on the continent. Aisha Barnes, the president and CEO of the Greater Washington, D.C. Black Chamber of Commerce, was at this year's Africa FinTech Summit. She sees opportunities to link Black-owned and diaspora businesses here with startups on the continent.
Our particular interest was really just making sure that we're building and bridging a complete networking community around Black and diasporic businesses. To that end, we were really excited about the innovation and capital conversations that were happening. Our job is to make sure that we're getting capital to the Black businesses that are in this area, but also thinking about businesses that have diasporic interest and global interest, and making sure that we can get funding, support, and preparedness for those opportunities.
Experts say Africa's fintech industry is expected to reach at least $230 billion in revenue by 2025, despite the regulatory difficulties some entrepreneurs face on the continent. As a solution, Barker and other leaders in the global finance sector say more nations should embrace the African Union's Africa Continental Free Trade Area, a trade pact that embraces digital technology and easy trade across the continent. Mike Obe, VOA News, Washington.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump will be in court in New York as prosecutors begin to lay out their case to jurors in his trial related to paying hush money. Julie Walker with the Associated Press has more from outside the court.
For the first time in history, prosecutors are presenting a criminal case against a former American president to a jury as they accuse Donald Trump of a hush money scheme aimed at preventing damaging stories about his personal life from becoming public. A jury here in Manhattan at this criminal court is to hear opening statements today from prosecutors and defense lawyers in the first of four criminal cases against Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee, to reach trial. The arguments are expected to give the 12-person jury the clearest view to date of the allegations at the heart of the case. At court in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.
The U.S. economy is always a major factor in the presidential campaign because the president plays a key role in setting and shaping trade and economic policies. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Prosciutti reports on how the economy is doing and the difference between how the two presidential contenders would handle it.
President Joe Biden grew up in this house, in a working-class neighborhood in a northeastern U.S. town. Using his background, Biden this week cast former President Donald Trump as out of touch.
He looks at the economy from Mar-a-Lago, where he and his rich friends embraced the failed trickle-down policies that have failed working families for more than 40 years. Scranton values or Mar-a-Lago values. These are the competing visions for our economy, and they raise questions of fundamental fairness to the heart of this campaign.
During the beginning of Trump's term, the economy was strong, with unemployment at 3.5%. Dee Bovaer is a Trump supporter in New Hampshire.
Everybody was happy. Everybody was making money. Everybody was good.
But then COVID. In Trump's final year, unemployment shot up to 14.7%. Last month's unemployment rate was back down to 3.8%. Howard Webster is a Biden supporter in Arizona.
And what Joe Biden has done for the economy, it's the best economy we've had, lowest unemployment.
Critics labeled President Biden's approach as Bidenomics, but Biden embraced the term and said it was helping regular Americans.
I see an America where the economy grows from the middle out and the bottom up. And that way, the middle class does well and the poor have a shot.
But many agree inflation remains too high, even though it has fallen from a peak in 2022 to around 3.5% now. Voters still blame Biden. So does former President Trump.
We have to explain to the American people what the hell is going on, because they're looking at the border and they're looking at inflation and they're looking at the economy, which is terrible.
As president, Donald Trump's policies largely favored American-made products. He continues that in his campaign, here talking about Mexican-made cars.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those guys.
This week's Reuters poll indicates that Americans believe Trump would handle the economy better than the current president. Carolyn Frasutti, VOA News.
Six soldiers have been killed in an ambush in central Nigeria where the army is fighting criminal gangs. A statement by the military says troops on a fighting patrol in Shiroro district in Niger state were ambushed on Friday, leading to a gunfight. The French news agency AFP reports two officers and four soldiers were killed. Two other soldiers were wounded in the ambush. The statement says troops eliminated several of the terrorists as well as captured some of their equipment. Northwest and central Nigeria have for years been plagued by gangs of criminals known as bandits who raid villages, kill and abduct residents for ransom, and loot and burn homes. Though driven by financial gain, there are concerns among officials and analysts about their growing ties with Islamic extremists waging a 15-year insurgency in the northeast. And now time for sports. I have in studio our VOA sports analyst intern, Omolemo Kali. And he's here to fill us in about the weekend's big boxing match and recent NBA playoff matches that happened over the weekend. Welcome to African News Tonight, Omolemo.
Thank you.
So what were the results of the boxing match over the weekend?
Yes, over the weekend, there was the big WBC super lightweight match. And Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia was an unbelievable match. Devin Haney, the undefeated, who was once undefeated, got knocked down three times throughout the entire fight and lost to Ryan Garcia. His record is 31-1. Ryan Garcia's record is 24-1. Unfortunately, because Ryan Garcia didn't make the weigh-ins for his weight, he remains, unfortunately, not the WNBC super lightweight champion, and it stays with Devin Haney.
And what were some of the results so far in the NBA playoffs?
Yes, the NBA playoffs. Let's start with the West Coast. Phoenix Suns beat Minnesota Timberwolves 120-95. The Los Angeles Clippers beat Dallas Mavericks 109-97. The New Orleans Pelicans beat Oklahoma City Thunder 94-92. The Denver Nuggets beat Los Angeles Lakers 114-103. In the East Coast, the New York Knicks beat Philadelphia 76ers 111-104. The Boston Celtics beat Miami Heat 114-94. The Cleveland Cavaliers beat Orlando Magic 97-83. And the Milwaukee Bucks beat Indiana Pacers 109-94.
And what else has been going on?
The big BAL for the Nile Conference. On the 19th, Al Ahly Liberia Sporting Club beat Bangui Sporting Club 93-71. The Al Ahly Egyptian Sporting Club beat City Oilers 99-76. And on the 20th, Bangui Sporting Club beat City Oilers 101-88, and the Al Ahly Egyptian Sporting Club beat Al Ahly Libya Sporting Club 98-86. And for more updates, make sure to check the VOA website, www.voaafrica.com.
Sports analyst intern Omolemo Kali, thank you for your input.
VOA. Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.